Welcome everyone to Electronic Talks podcast. I have a very special guest today. It's a DJ that has played for over 20 years in the Stockholm scene, and she has also been part of depicting the electronic music scene here for many years. So very welcome, Hanna Kjellander.
Thank you very much. So nice to be invited.
Yes, very nice to have you here.
Thank you.
I most recently saw you even this weekend.
Yeah.
You were playing at the Rosendal Garden Party.
Yes, it was 2 days ago, Saturday. Yeah.
It was amazing to see. And as usual, you were playing more kind of ambient, slow, chill electronic music, or what? How would you describe the style?
I would describe it like that as well. More now that I play a little bit more with like beats and stuff, but this day they wanted me to play more soft things because it was just in the early afternoon in the start of the day. So, but I tried to build it up a little bit. But yeah, it was very soft. It was supposed to be just so people could come there and sit in the sun and just chill before everything started up more.
Yes, which is very nice to be in that mode. I think you've been kind of a proponent of, you know, talking about also the importance of having maybe like a chill area or like that kind of, like you used to have in the scene in the 90s, kind of like in raves or whatnot.
Yes.
There's this function to it that I think is very important in this kind of event, you know, that it's not just a main stage, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's important. And I also think it's important with places where you can go and sit down and listen to like electronic music. And I have always thought that it is important to the only two choices you can have on a like in a weekend shouldn't be just like stay home or go to a rave. I want to have something in between as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very, very important.
Yeah, I think so.
Yes. And what was your opinion on Aphex Twin, just for fun, you know? Like, he was playing in the same evening, you know, after you, so...
Yeah. I don't really know what to say. It was... can I say it was, like, fucking amazing?
Yeah.
I loved it. I loved every second of it. Mm-hmm. And I was a bit surprised by how good it was. I mean, I love Aphex Twin. I've always loved him. But I thought that it was maybe going to be like not that good. I was thinking it was going to be like maybe more difficult or more hard to take in or I don't know. But it was just, it felt like it was kind of Aphex Twin best of and then not best of his like actual songs, more best of his sounds.
Yeah, yes.
It was just... Oh, I was blown away.
Yeah.
Blown away.
And it was interesting too how he, like the way he used visuals and everything and how everything just came together.
Yes.
Almost like an art installation.
Yes.
In some sense, or like something more than just a normal live show, right?
Yes. It was super cool. And I think he enjoyed it too because he looked happy in the end.
That's nice.
And he like waved or what he did.
Right. He did. Yeah.
So, yesterday, the day after, I was couldn't think about anything else. I was just totally...
Yes.
It was amazing.
It felt kind of like a reset.
Yes.
One of my friends said it was almost like he was kind of like a shaman putting out this energy or something. And it's like afterwards, it was hard to stop thinking about that.
Yeah,
you know,
it was.
The vibe
was.
Or whatever you would call it.
Yes, it was a great vibe. And, and then the contrast to this, like... Swedish festival with all the like Red Bull signs and I didn't expect it to be as good as it was.
Yes.
So I'm very happy about it. I hope he is too.
Yes. I think he should be probably. It was a cool setting too with the forest and everything around it. So but to go back to, you know, go away again from the like big festival stages or whatnot and go back to what you were kind of referring to is that we actually need more spaces for experiencing music in a different way. And I know like I saw you also last year at Hosoi Festival and I know you've been playing at the Hosoi Club here.
Yes.
Also recently.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about how you approach that kind of session as opposed to a festival setting or another setting?
Yeah, I think I'm trying to, when I play records, I try to like build something up that's not like the same thing you build up on a dance floor. It's more that I want to create something that can make people feel relaxed, but not like relaxed in a, I don't really know how to describe it, but I want to create like a good feeling, like this, like living room, relax with your friends feeling. Mm-hmm. But I really love like different sounds, small sounds. So I want to. I want to build up a set with a nice vibe, but also with interesting sounds. Yeah. So I'm trying to create that, and I'm trying to make it like something bubbling.
Okay.
So it's like something you can experience it and listen if you want to, but you can also just be there and maybe not think about that you actually. Listen, you just have a good time, hopefully. Mm-hmm. So that's maybe how I try to do. And I also I love to have like music from, it can be 25 years ago, but it can also be something that's released last week and everything in between.
Right.
I think that's... That's fun. That's how I normally do when I try to.
So like kind of mixing a little bit different styles or different eras, but then mend them together somehow in a coherent way.
Yeah. And it's often like when I play something, then that makes me start to think about like, oh, this would be so good together with maybe a little bit of sounds like this. And then I think about what records do I have that I can create this with, and then I just know and can go to my record collection and just I'm looking for just that special record because I know exactly that I want to mix that one in after so it's something that I create with more with like what kind of sounds that I think can be nice together.
So kind of more the soundscape, not necessarily, you know, the BPM or stuff like that, but more like the mood, the sound.
Exactly.
That's a nice approach. I really like that.
That's more
telling a story or getting people into a certain mood.
And the starting of that was that I didn't know how to beat mix. So I was like, okay, I need to do something else, or I need to learn how to beat mix. But then I realized that it's not that difficult to do beat mix, and that it's actually sometimes maybe more difficult to create that like sound, the landscapes of sounds. So I decided to keep doing that instead.
Yes, sometimes that's the harder part, to find that meshing together these different moods.
Yeah, and I like that. I think it's fun.
And you mentioned now like how you got into it and you started and then you learned about this. When was this and how did it happen? Like how did you get into, you know, playing music for other people?
It was like you said in the beginning, it was more than 20 years ago, 23, 24, 25 even maybe. All my friends were into electronic music. They were like already DJs. So I could just go home to one of my friends and they had the equipment that was needed.
Right.
And that was a really good thing for me because I could start buying records and then I could go home to one of my friends and try. I could ask like all the, if there is any stupid questions, I could ask them to get that help. And so I was just trying and I how to learn, and I did it like in a safe environment. Mm. And I think it can be much more difficult. And maybe not now, because now you can do so many different ways how to play music out.
Right.
But back then, when it was like, for me at least, vinyl, and I needed someone who had like techniques,
yes,
and a mixer. Mm-hmm. And my friends had that. And then I think like maybe, I don't know, a half year later, I bought my own equipment so I could keep doing it at home. But then I'd never had like that an idea of actually play out somewhere. It was mm-hmm. more that I thought it was fun and I wanted to do it like anything you do that you think is fun, and mm-hmm. you don't have any, maybe not have any idea of a goal or anything.
Mm-hmm.
It was just fun.
So it started more, it was more for yourself experiencing it, and then it transformed into
Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Would you say that you had like a pivotal moment or a special gig or something that inspired you? Or was it the whole scene as a whole and your friends?
No, there was the whole scene and my friends.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I can say that it was one special. But what I can say is when this in Stockholm back in, it must have been 24 years ago, mm-hmm. The DJ like coffee shop Svai started,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of, that was really an inspiration for me, because it was a nice place, and like I talked about when I play records with my friends, that it was that kind of safe environment.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was just super nice there, and they had turntables and a mixer there, so you could go there and play. One woman who worked there, Anna Öström,
mm-hmm.
she asked me if I wanted to play.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a Sunday morning or something.
Right.
And I was super nervous, super, super nervous.
Mm-hmm.
But she was there and like helped me,
mm-hmm.
and was very nice and kind. And after that, I think I booked myself into one a weekend after as well,
mm-hmm.
because it was so fun.
Yeah.
So I think Svai was... There was a lot of inspiration there in general. There was mm-hmm. a lot of DJs, a lot of things going on there.
Yeah.
I met a lot of friends there, and
mm-hmm.
even my daughter's dad.
Really?
Yeah,
okay,
what.
Okay. So very important key place,
yes,
in the development.
Yes, 100%, yes.
Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned a little bit before, but like how would you say like the landscape has changed from that time? Like, how would you say, as a DJ, you know, playing today or playing then, do you approach it differently? Does it feel the same to you? Or
it's difficult to know what's changed, like, in the scene,
mm-hmm.
and what's changed because I'm 20 years older.
Right.
But one thing that I think have changed into something much better, is that when I started playing, at least in this like electronic music scene, there wasn't many women at all playing records.
Right.
So that was when I started to have my like that DJ name, Knivflickan, because I thought it felt important to have a name that you already knew from the name that it was a woman.
Right.
And it wasn't many at all. And Anna that I mentioned earlier, she started Sister Stockholm.
Mm-hmm.
There was like some kind of like DJ collective for women.
Mm-hmm.
So female DJs teached other women who was interested in learning how everything worked with the technique and everything.
Yeah.
So both thanks to Sister Stockholm, but also, I don't know, other things, of course.
Mm.
Now it's much more, like much more female DJs in the electronic music scene.
Yes.
I think I knew, back then, I think I knew it was like me and two others.
Right, basically.
Yes, in Stockholm, mm-hmm. Playing like techno or electronic music. With more female DJs in, I think, like in the R&B scene, or, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but just electronic scene was. Yeah, so that's a big something that has changed, and that's really good.
That's amazing.
Of course, of course, it's really good.
Yeah, nowadays you can go, you can see a lineup for a weekend, and it's like even in the same place, it can be 3+ female DJs without a problem.
And
you know,
yes,
it's
exactly.
Like, it's, and it's nothing strange. It's like the common thing now. So
yeah, and I don't know if I don't think I even like think about it or notice it. That much, but because back then it was more like, okay, have they booked any female DJ?
Right.
Now I don't even think about it anymore, and I guess that's a good thing. Or
that's definitely a good thing. Yeah. No, I think that's an interesting development.
Yes,
definitely, and it shows that maybe, you know, the scene as a whole, or at least the landscape here, has grown in a good way.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm very happy about it, that.
And also throughout the years, you've also been part of like documenting electronic music in different ways, in journalistic ways, you know, being part of directing a film, for instance.
Yes.
And could you tell me a little bit about how that journey started as well? Because it's interesting, like going from DJing, being in these circles, into actually making stuff out of it like that.
Yeah. That started with the journalist Mats Almgård. Mm-hmm. He did an interview with me for the radio show Ström i P2 mm-hmm. for Swedish National Radio. Mm-hmm. And he asked me what my best song, like, ever is.
Mm-hmm.
And we met at a cafe, and he recorded me, and mm-hmm. we had a nice talk. And it was like after that we were just friends, and we started hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
And I still remember when he sat in my kitchen and asked me if I wanted to be a part of the radio show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm no journalist. I have never worked like done any like interviews like that before. But it was just like my super big interest. Mm-hmm. In music.
Yeah.
So I think I just said, yes, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like straight into Sveriges Radio.
Right.
Maybe a bit unfair to everyone who like go to journalist school and works a lot with to have the chance to do something like that. But I think the thing was like Mats is a journalist, and they wanted someone who had a big music interest.
Exactly.
And Andreas Teliander and Håkan Lidbo was there
mm-hmm.
already.
Yes.
So
probably your background within electronic music played a bigger part.
Yes.
Of course.
So we started doing that radio show, or they had already done it for a mm-hmm. couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I started with them and doing Ström i P2, and then after I don't remember how many years, 3 or 4 mm-hmm. years, it turned into Elektroniskt i P2.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did some festivals like Volt Festival in Uppsala.
Yes, I think I attended that a couple of editions.
Yeah.
It was very special kind of festival.
Yeah, it was very special in many,
there was
many
nothing
ways.
Really like that.
No.
At that time, I would say.
I agree. Mm. I agree. And then we also had like small things like Ström Bar. We had like mm-hmm. a bar every Wednesday. Where you could listen to the radio show, mm-hmm. and then it was DJs playing in the bar, and then someone got up with this idea to make this TV documentary about electronic music,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and we did.
Yeah,
we asked people at Sveriges Television, SVT, and mm-hmm. they they said, yeah, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if we had pitched it as like a 3-episode documentary, 1 hour each. But they said like, okay, you can do it, but we want you to do like 1 hour with the electronic music development in Sweden from the 50s until now. And we also want you to have like what happened in the society at the same time, so we can do like a connection between the music and the society.
Mm-hmm.
And we said like, yes, we can do that. And then we started.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like quite a task.
It was. Yeah.
And how did you end up metamorphizing that into existence?
We worked a lot. And we had good people to work with. Good people who could do all the like technical things that we didn't know how to do. And we started to just like thinking about how can we do this, and like what happened every year, and what people are important to talk to, and try to do all the take all the contacts and do all the interviews, and it was super difficult, but we finally made it somehow.
Yeah.
But it was released now, I think it was 10 years ago, so right. I don't remember all the details about
But how was the reception?
It was quite good, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it. I tried to get a hold of it now, but it was not readily available before this show.
I'd love to see it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. But it was, I think it was... I think there was a lot of people who liked it, or I know it was.
Yeah.
Some people thought it was like too, everything went too fast.
Oh, I see.
And like, yeah, it was quite, like you said, like quite a big task. So 1 hour to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also made it like, so it was like we beat mixes, the like the speaker voice was also like a beat. It was...
Interesting.
Interesting. I think that's a good description of the whole thing and the result.
Yeah.
Interesting. But I'm happy. I watched it, I think it was just a couple of weeks ago, and then I haven't seen it for years.
Wow, okay.
I still like it.
That's nice. That's a nice test of time to feel that, you know, because some stuff becomes so dated. So maybe you having this bigger task kind of made it like that somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
Mm.
And now, when it's like 10 years later, I can watch it and don't think so much about. I don't know. I see it more like as a whole now, and it's it's just I like it.
Can see the big picture.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I can see the big picture. Mm.
So throughout those years, you had this kind of journalistic journey. Do you think that affected your DJing in any way, or your view on music?
Yes.
Personally.
Yes. Yeah. We had quite a lot DJ gigs with all of us together who made the radio show.
Mm-hmm.
Like Mats, Andreas, Håkan and I, we went around to do like show Ström showcase and electronics, Petro Ström showcase.
Yeah.
So we did a lot of gigs together.
Mm-hmm.
But I think also, I stopped playing records a bit because this took like all my, not all my time, but maybe all the time I had for music. Because my daughter was born 14 years ago when we did the show. And I also had a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
So... It was more that I felt like I can't do so many DJ gigs and do the radio show and be a mom for a really small kid and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I focused more on the radio show. And and I think you can think that I maybe should have been like more interested in music.
Yeah.
And I think I was for a couple of years. And I like I learned so much from my colleagues, mm-hmm. Mats and Andreas, and but it was also something like, I mean, because I'm no journalist. I have always played records, and everything with music has just been like just fun.
Yes,
never been mm-hmm. connected to like work.
Yeah.
So I think I lost my interest a bit in discovering like new things. But at the same time, I discovered a lot while we were doing the radio show. But it was like I could see that I did things like differently. So I didn't play didn't have so many DJ things during those years. But that was okay. I mean, we did the radio show instead.
Sure. You were still involved in the music. So.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that was like all the time I had to mm-hmm. for the music, and then I chose to do the radio show.
Yeah. So that's kind of an interesting topic. Like, how did you kind of rekindle your passion for music for you?
I decided after like 7 years, I think mm-hmm. it was, to stop doing the radio show.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that was difficult because it was like so much fun, mm-hmm. but it was also much work.
Yeah.
And I could see that like my colleagues were struggling and doing mm-hmm. a lot of like super interesting interviews.
Yeah.
And I felt like I couldn't really like be as good as they were, and it wasn't like at all that they said or did anything to make me feel like that, but I just felt like I don't know, I lost a bit of my inspiration.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I decided to stop doing it and go back to like just like be a mom and do my normal job instead,
mm-hmm.
the job I had except the radio show.
And
in the like the first year or so, I wasn't so interested in music.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, interested, of course I was interested. I went to a couple of concerts and I listened to a lot of music at home, but mm-hmm. I went back to like just listening to like Depeche Mode, The Knife, Nine Inch Nails.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, kind of like safe things or music that I like always had listened to. And then suddenly after a year or so, I found myself at like Fade Records again and mm-hmm. asked Micke, who worked there, for like, okay, what's released this week? And after a while everything like came back. Maybe I make it sound like the radio show was a bad thing, because it wasn't at all. It was super amazing. It was just that my focus was on like different things during the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. I mean, it's natural in 5 or 7 year periods. There's usually like you're moving into different sectors of your life and your development, you know. And as you said, maybe you needed to go back to the basics once again to then launch into new stuff.
Yeah, I think I think I needed that. So,
and since then you've been playing more actively or having a little bit more gigs.
Yes,
recently.
Yes, I would say I started to DJ a bit more like the year before the pandemic, I started to think it was like fun again.
Mm-hmm.
And I got also more like requests than earlier. So I was just like starting up again, and then the pandemic came.
Right.
But it was also, I mean, the pandemic was obviously not good, but I mean, just for the music and the DJing, then I started like buying more records, listen to more music at home. So when the pandemic was like over, then I had a lot of new records, and I looked forward to play them out. A little bit more DJ gigs now.
Yeah,
It's not like super often, and that's okay, because I don't want to have DJ gigs every weekend anymore.
No, right.
I want to do like, I don't know, 5 or 6 every year. Something like that.
Yeah, but that's also nice. That probably means that like there's time, as you say, in between. You can just listen to records, get new records, and you know, I'm guessing by this point you have quite a few vinyl records to choose from.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, but I think it's like 5-6 times a year. That's good, because then, like you said, then I think it's fun every time I do it. It's not like I'm too tired or haven't even like unpacked my record bag since the last gig.
Exactly. More of an inspiration. You can make more of a unique listening experience for each time.
Yes.
In some sense.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I have time to prepare what I want, and I think it's everything about it needs to be fun.
Yes.
I mean, now when I'm like 44, it's not that I'm trying to do like a DJ. Like it's not like I try to like be someone or get more gigs or earn money or something. Not anymore. Yeah. That was more what I wanted when I was like 25. Now I just want to play some nice music sometimes.
Isn't that a great position to be in?
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
It certainly sounds like a very, very healthy approach to it.
It is. Like I said, it's great and it's fun. It's like play nice music and hang out with friends. And maybe hear them in good speakers as well.
Yes, very important. And what's your vision now, like for the forthcoming year or so? Do you have any particular plans or a vision for what kind of stuff you want to play or where you want to play?
I guess the boring answer is like no.
Yeah.
But I think I have some ideas or some maybe even plans. I want to do more back-to-back sets.
Nice.
I think it's super fun. And like we just talked about, to do things together with like play nice music for friends or with friends. I think it's so I like the thing with, you know, if you hang out with a friend at home and you start playing a record and then your friend is like, oh, this makes me think about this one. And then we play something else. And then that make me think about something else. And it's just like, it's nice, like, what do you say? Like nice thing.
Like and a I want to,
yeah,
process,
yes, exactly,
right?
exactly. And it makes me, I like that like creative thing that you hear something. And then you're like, oh, I want to play this for you because this is so, I want you to hear this. It's so good. And then I want to find something else to play for. So I want to do more stuff like that because I think that's really fun.
Yeah.
And it's not always super fun to play like 4 hours out just like on your own.
That's the thing too, right? It can be quite lonely or solitary as an experience.
That's true. That's so true. So that's maybe like one of my plans that I want to do more back-to-back gigs with friends.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah? And then we'll see if someone wants us to play somewhere. But something always shows up. So I guess that will happen.
Very, very exciting. So I'm hoping to see some more gigs from you, maybe this coming summer or beginning of the autumn.
Yeah, thank you. I hope so too.
Yeah, thank you for coming over here. I
really
appreciate
it. It's so nice to be invited. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
And yes, I'll keep people posted when you play the next time as well. So that's it for this episode of Electronic Talks podcast. Thank you very much, as usual. Subscribe on YouTube, but also follow us on Spotify, where we're also on video nowadays. So thank you very much and see you again soon.
Thank you.